it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Wiz and World Cup Daily Podcast. India are out in front at the top of the table, the only unbeaten side left in the competition after downing New Zealand by 4 wickets in Dharamsala. I'm joined by Wiz and India editor Adya Sharma and Katty Whitney to pick through the game. Adya, this has been a tournament without any properly close finishes so far, and so I think this counts as a tight game, even if India did spend a bit of time farting around trying to get Kohli 100 at the end. It was one with 2 overs to spare, for only 4 wickets in hand. And there were times when New Zealand were properly in the game, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's as close as you get to a close game. I think obviously New Zealand were a few runs short than they would have aimed for, especially how Mitchell was batting, how Ravindra was batting. But I think from an India perspective, it sort of shows that it's not a complete side. There are still things that need to be worked on. Unfortunately, Hardik Pandya is not there. That really changes the balance of the team. But all in all, I think if you just look at it, they'd be happy with those 2 points.
I was trying to work out, Katia, whether who played well in this game. I was going to wrap up all the stuff that New Zealand did well and India did badly, because it felt like New Zealand, it felt like they batted quite well. Like they targeted Kuldeep Yadav really well. They got on top of him and he's been a brilliant bowler this tournament. India dropped a lot of catches. Darryl Mitchell made a brilliant 100. New Zealand fielded absolutely amazingly. India had a comedy run out. Felt like the New Zealand openers beat the bat loads. And yet India won with a reasonable amount of comfort. Is it encouraging that they were pushing, that there were those holes, or is it worrying that an ominous that they were still had a bit of distance between them and who have been the second best side in the competition, even with that side mostly playing really well and with India having a few off days, I guess?
I mean, they still look pretty good, right? Even though this was probably their worst performance as a team. And I say worst in inverted commas, like their technically worst performance of the tournament, and they still look pretty good. When you were saying that, I was just thinking, they weren't that bad, were they? Didn't do all that, did they? When you've got Rohit coming out with the bat like that, with Shubman Gill, with Virat Kohli as well, near enough getting 100, it doesn't really matter. You can afford to have those drops. You can afford to play below par sometimes if you've got all those players in the form that they're in with the game plan that they've got. They didn't have Hardik for this game and they still looked like absolutely like the dominant team in the tournament that they've been. So, yeah, I guess it probably is a good thing that they've been pushed, because they look like they're going to do it at a canter, if anything, for our peace of mind that, they actually are really good, because this is the other best team in the tournament managing to push them a bit. But yeah, I just don't think it really matters, because they just look so good, even when they're not.
For me, Adya, it's Bumrah in particular, and also to a lesser extent, Jadeja, that means that they're almost, you just can't get on top of them as a batting side, or it feels impossible to, because you have two guys there that are so, so hard to hit. And especially in Bumrah's case, someone who's a real threat as well, even bowling, but bowling at the hard times in the game. I mean, they were brilliant with the new ball, India. Let's give them that. They were really good. And, it felt like a victory when New Zealand had played out Jadeja, none for 48 from 10 overs. And yet those are kind of exceptional middle overs figures in an ODI. I mean, we have had questions on this. So Darshan Senthil asks, India have been near flawless in the five games so far. How could the remaining teams beat them? He's got a point, right? It seems almost impossible at the moment, unless you've spotted a flaw in the game plan that no one else has.
There's no obvious flaw as such. There's nothing, you know, that the team can really point out and say, okay, this is something that we are doing incorrectly. But what we've seen in all these games so far is that there have been moments where India has been on the back foot, and yet they've been able to bounce back from that. What teams can do is sort of, maybe first of all, I think the most important thing is target the first 10 overs. That's where Rohit Sharma, that's where the top order has had the most impact. I think that's been the biggest win for India through the tournament yet. Because we know how Bumrah is, we know, you know, him coming back to his best. That's one aspect. Jadeja and Kuldeep bowling in tandem is another aspect. But if the way Australia managed to, they didn't have enough runs on the board, but if the team managed to put India on the back foot in the first 10 overs, I think that's really one big, one big area to focus on. But if I might add one more point, I think it's from an Indian fans' perspective, it's okay to have these kind of wins also, because you don't really want to, just rush through the tournament at the top of the points table and then, figure out all your weaknesses right at the end, which has happened too many times. So, a scratchy win here and there is okay, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time Jadeja's had a bat in the tournament, isn't it? And he looked really good, but you don't want Jadeja's first bat to be when you're, 90 for five in a semi-final, as has happened before.
I was
wondering, do South Africa pose an interesting challenge to India in that they're such a different side to New Zealand? They bat so deep, but they also, there's almost like there's a specific game plan there where they're trying to get up to what they think is a decent score. Whereas South Africa, they will go really hard. If anyone I think is going to hit Bumrah for 65 in a spell, it's South Africa somehow, or if they can get on top of Jadeja. I feel like that's one of the ways it's got to be. I guess India also haven't batted first. That would be another test. And I guess also it's worth saying that New Zealand, they could have won this game, right? Like, they beat the bat a lot in those first 10 overs. If a couple of those, there was an edge that went just under Mitchell's slip, wasn't there? If that goes to hand, maybe the game looks a bit different. So maybe all hope is not quite lost?
I think we said yesterday, if South Africa come off, they pose a threat to any side in the tournament, as England also found out yesterday. But I think you are right in that New Zealand's game plan, while they're really good, it did kind of play into India's strengths when they're having the kind of day that they had today. Mm. It was such a New Zealand kind of total to post them as well, just under 300, and then back your bowlers to get it done. But that's not really what beating India requires. I think you're going to have to go all out attack. You're going to have to, as Adia says, capitalize on that power play when India are batting, on those first few overs when Rohit and Gill are out there. And that's what South Africa will do. And also with the bat, you're going to have to try and take at least one of their bowlers down. You just have to, because they don't give you anything. I think South Africa, of the teams they've got left to play in the tournament, are probably the one that's most interesting. Or now that New Zealand are kind of ticked off the list, that's the next challenger, if you like. That's the next most likely, you think, to beat them. I think you've just also kind of got to accept you're probably not going to beat them and chuck the kitchen sink at it and see if you can, to be honest.
I guess the other option is just to make it really, really foggy and hope that they just can't see anything, as happened that weird break and play in Dharamsala today. A bit more on it from an India point of view, Adya. I mean, Mohammad Shami he was playing his first game of the tournament, was named player of the match. I don't actually know if I thought he was the best bowler. That sounds weird to say, but like the two balls that he got that 2-2 with were brilliant, so fair enough. His World Cup stats are ridiculous though. Like he's got the best average of any bowler in the World Cup ever. Only Stark has more fourfers or more fivefers. And yet he's not kind of a first pick in that team. It's probably worth explaining why he is in that team. Like with Hardik Pandya injured, they brought in Suryakumar Yadav as a specialist bat, and that meant they needed to bolster the bowling, so they left out Shardul Thakur. Siraj, obviously Bumrah has to play, Siraj is the other fast bowler, and he is still number one ranked bowler in the world, isn't he? And he had the exact same things as Bumrah today. He had a good day, had an LBW decision that was just turned down off his bowling. Is there a decision to make over which two of him, Siraj and Shardul, to pick when Pandya is back fit? Or do they just go back to the tried and tested formula, do you think?
I think, first of all, the confusion comes from the fact that the Indian bowling lineup hasn't been consistent in the last few months leading up to the World Cup. Bumrah obviously was a late entry. Shami, in the last 2 years or so, last 2-3 years actually, he has been in and out, in the sense like he's been rested. There was a younger crop of players bowling in the middle. There was Prasidh Krishna there. So injuries and rotation has sort of never given India, in the last couple of years, a specific bowling attack. Coming to this tournament, I feel there won't be a unified strategy. I feel it's going to be more match to match. They'll go game by game based on the surface. They have, say, someone like an R. Ashwin in the team specifically for tracks that will spin more, that will turn more. And I think the other discussion, if Hardik Pandya is fit, is about Shardul Thakur. And I think he's sort of the most talked about aspect of the bowling attack, you know, what his value is in the team. I still feel that his batting is sort of more of an illusion, in the sense like he isn't really, he's not really adding a lot of batting value at the end, but you still feel that there is some cushion towards the end. What I feel is, it's I think it's okay to sort of drop Thakur. Because if your top seven can do what they are capable of, I don't think you need a Thakur at the end to really give yourself some batting cushion. I think just go with a strong core batting, and then have specialist bowlers in there. So I would say just when Pandya's back, you can not have Shardul, and you can have Shami and Siraj. And then again, based on if the conditions are turning, then you can have Ashwin.
I think I do see that. And obviously, I think from a fan's point of view, obviously you want to have all the really, really exciting players in there. And Shardul Thakur, obviously there's a certain appeal to him, but he's not, he's not going to be cracking the stumps twice in two balls with, reverse swingers at 140 kph, whatever. But I weirdly do get why India pick him. Shami maybe gets into an all-time India ODI 11, and yet somehow he's not in India's ODI 11 right now, and he's bowling really well. But firstly, it's like, do you actually, you just don't need another 10-over bowler in a way, because you've got Hardik Pandya, who has bowled brilliant in this tournament, and you've got four other bankers as well. So actually, you do need someone just to provide a bit of relief. And I think you even kind of saw today, when Kohli falls, and we will get to that, for 95, the game is done, so it's fine. But if India had needed another, even 20, 25 at that point, all of a sudden you're looking, oh wow, Shami at 8, that's not great. There's a chance to rush through here where and actually this doesn't really show up in the batting stats, but Shardul Thakur, if he comes out and he plays a pretty calm 12 off 12 to see a side home from there, that is really valuable, even though you don't end up giving someone that much credit for it, And you almost see the same with New Zealand as well. They've got Mark Chapman at number 7. They don't need him there, but why pick the extra bowler who you're definitely not going to need rather than the batter who you are probably not going to need? So I do get it, even though it is weird, because obviously Mohammad Shami / Mohammad Siraj are better cricketers than Shardul Thakur. That's just the situation that they kind of have. And it's a very, very good problem to have if the most discussed player is the number 8 who barely bowls and is very rarely to do the bat as well.
I guess it's complicated by how sort of bad India's tail is. It's just a very long tail. And if someone in the past we've had someone like Bhuvneshwar Kumar or Deepak Chahar who can still hold a bat and do the job that a bowling all-rounder probably does. But yeah.
I guess we should talk about the Kohli 100 thing. Again, the runs he needed for 100 and that India needed to win were pretty much equal. And again, you had him turning down singles. He almost clicks up a gear when he's just inside of that 100, starts scampering twos with this crazy rapidity. We have had questions about it, Adya, and I figured I'd just put it to you because you wrote a piece for the Wisden website which showed that your opinion had maybe changed since you were asked about this on the podcast after the Bangladesh game.
Yeah, I think the reaction to Kohli's century in that game was extreme, I feel, because India was in a comfortable position and then we were talking about a lot of hypotheticals in the sense like what India's net run rate would be for a team that's already second on the points table. So in that sense, I think it was a very comfortable finish in that game. So for me, what the reaction to Kohli's approach was, I think it was not really justified. And at the end of it, he also said, I mean, K.L. Rahul said that it was his idea, not Kohli's. But yeah, I think today it wasn't as comfortable, but it was still not a situation where India was stuck. And barring that refused single, I think Kohli was still very much in control of the innings. So even today, I don't think it really was him, you know, forgetting what the required runs are and just going for his century.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel about it, Katia. I guess one thing that I don't think this isn't specifically a Virat Kohli thing in terms of India. Like, I think it has happened to be him twice in a row. But I think if any India batter were on 90 with 10 needed to win and the game pretty much shown up, I do think that whoever was in with them would be trying to give them a chance to get there. Right? Or do you not agree? It's just Virat Kohli, it's so fun that it's him because everything swirls around him. But I think if it were Kara Hall or Sky or Gill, they would be playing for that milestone. Whether that's right or wrong or not, I don't think it's a specifically Kohli thing.
I think potentially, I think you're right in that the reason it's riled people up so much is more to do with the fact that it's Kohli than that it's, you know, the what he's doing. Because so many players have done that, right? I think the previous incident was also had the brilliant theatre of obviously Richard Kettleborough, and, you know, this lacked that. While it was a bit closer, it lacked Michael Goff, you know, meme potential. I don't have a massive problem with it, if I'm honest with you, as long as wides are called when they're meant to be called. You know, it's your batting, your innings, your team's innings. Do whatever you want with it, you know, just don't cry when it all goes wrong. And it hasn't gone wrong yet, so it's all fun and games, it's all fine.
Yeah,
until it isn't.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, people were referencing that it'd been a long time since Kohli had made a World Cup 100, even though he'd averaged 60 in the 2019 World Cup with some unbeaten 50s in there. So as much people say, oh, you know, it doesn't matter, play for the team, sometimes those same people are saying, like, oh, Kohli's not got a World Cup 100 in a while, so these things don't matter, and maybe they do matter a little bit. But that is probably more than enough time on a thing that really didn't affect the game at all, which is almost the point of it. Katia, how good are New Zealand? They've won four and now lost just the one, but those four were against four of the easier teams, and let's bracket England in that. They've got Australia, South Africa, Pakistan, Sri Lanka coming up. The next three games, Australia, South Africa, Pakistan. Those are all tough games. And if they were to lose all three, they would be in danger. But they're probably still okay, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit much to go on to say that the side who were unbeaten going into today's game might not qualify for the semi-final. They more than likely will. And they are very good. They are a very good side. They are the ones who've run India the closest, and that wasn't very close, but I think that says more about India than it does about New Zealand. Yeah, they are a really good side. I think, as ever with New Zealand, their game plan hasn't really changed for the last decade in ODI cricket, and it's a very simple, very understated way of doing things, almost like opposite of what India do. So it's very easy to predict how they're going to go out and go about and win their games. It doesn't make it ineffective, as we've seen so far in the tournament, but it also feels slightly vulnerable to coming unstuck at points. So as we mentioned with South Africa being the most likely to challenge India, they are also probably quite likely to challenge New Zealand by, you know, batting first, absolutely smashing them out of the park and setting a total that New Zealand don't have the firepower, I guess, maybe, to chase with the bat. So, yeah, I mean, they could come unstuck at some point, but they've looked pretty classy throughout the whole tournament. They've got so much depth with the bat and with the ball. We discussed it yesterday, like in a World Cup where so many sides are searching for balance. You know, and we've even started talking about it with India with this injury to Hardik. How do they bring him back, possibly keep Mohammad Shami and find the right balance in their side? That's not really a question we have with New Zealand because they are so well balanced. Yeah, and you don't go from winning your opening three, four games of the tournament, I've completely lost track, to then all of a sudden not being very good. They are very good and they're still tournament contenders. Yeah, they, you know, it just, they're New Zealand and they'll do what they'll do and they'll probably reach another final and hopefully, maybe this time they'll win it, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I think those two games will be fascinating, especially Australia and South Africa. Just, it'll be a clash of stars. And I can equally see New Zealand's plan working against South Africa, where a team that is, you know, getting every percentage and is really good in the field and keeps their heads about them, won't get rattled by that sort of attack. And that could also prove really interesting. But that game's in a while. Tomorrow, Pakistan play Afghanistan. We're getting to do or die time for a few teams, it feels like. Adi, you're going to be there. Pakistan really can't afford to lose this, can they, after having lost two in a row? And, you know, Afghanistan, you know, they beat England. They could pose them a bit of an issue.
Absolutely. I think the Chennai surface is known to have, you know, a bit of turn. It's going to be the same surface that India played Australia. So, you know, you can expect a similar sort of turn through the day. It's going to be hot in the morning, in the afternoon. So those are things to consider. I think just the surface-wise, I feel Pakistan's spin attack comes into the game a little, it's a little underwhelming because you have someone like a Shadab who didn't play the last game. You had Usama Amir coming in and Mohammad Nawaz also hasn't done anything spectacular in that sense. In that sense, I feel Afghanistan's spin attack is on paper stronger. And that could be, the decisive factor because we saw how Pakistan's batting really slowed down in the middle overs against India. So I feel that could be the interesting bit. But yes, as you mentioned, Pakistan cannot afford to sort of slip tomorrow. They started off well, but again, they have reached a point, as it happens to them often, where the next day could define how they go forward in the tournament.
And a big game for Babar Azam, I guess there's growing pressure on him as a captain. You know, you've got various ex-Pakistan cricketers saying he should step down, that sort of thing. He's also just not had a great tournament with the bat. And you feel that if Pakistan are to really trouble the last stages, they need him fully confident and in good form. So it's just a big game for him. But we'll be back tomorrow to pick over the bones of that game. Cheers, Katia. Cheers, Adia. And thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.